Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to Course in Miracles.
Thank you.
I like it.
Hey, Deborah. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
Tim, you look cold. It's 100 degrees here.
Yeah, right. I know. It's Ross Fit at the Century Mark.
Are you serving s'mores to us?
Virtual. Virtual s'mores are winging their way to California. Just hope that they don't melt into a pool of chocolate and marshmallow before they get to you.
FedEx me a box of cold air and water, please.
It's 62 degrees, guys. I'm wearing a sweatshirt.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you want some less or some s'mores.
Is that a s'mores pun?
That's a s'mores pun.
Yeah.
If I want some less or some more.
I'd rather catch a s'mores pun than COVID.
Hi, Emily.
Hi there. How are you?
Hey.
Oh, hi, Emily.
Hi, Emily.
Welcome.
Wow.
Okay. Welcome to Course in Miracles. And welcome to the opportunity, as usual, but to change your mind.
Yeah.
To change your mind. You know, bottom line, that's what it's all about. That's what a miracle is. I can already tell you that's the job that you have to do, to change your mind. Changing your life is yet another fantasy and a dream. You've probably already done that a few times. Those of you who managed to get divorced or change jobs or geographically trying to get away from a problem. And you are right back to the basic fundamental separation challenge of being an ego. Fear, guilt, loneliness, worthlessness, the promise of happiness, a little bit of happiness, to actually make some ground. And then you or somebody you love loses some ground. And on it goes, around and around. That's your world. That's the world that you don't remember designing because that part of your mind is not available to you. However, it's still your mind. You live every second with your mind and the choices you make. That's what you live. That's what you live. That's how you live. Seek no further than your own mind. Thank goodness it's that simple. I didn't say easy. You're so powerful getting yourself where you find yourself today. You're so powerful at doing that no, it is not going to be easy. Anybody who tells you it's easy, they're also probably fantasizing. But that it's simple. This is truly the good news. Yeah, go ahead.
Tim, your fire is hard for me to look at. I'm very sensitive to light. Is there any way I can see you instead of the fire?
Your wish is my command.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
You'll have to ignore the camper's light, which I have outfitted my forehead with for usually astronomy events, but in this case, it's so that I can read in the dark.
Nice. I love it.
Anyway, thank you.
Andrew?
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yep.
So I want to say an opportunity to allow my mind to change. I want, you know, as opposed, somehow it seems like, well, anyway, that's what I'm inclined to say.
If you phrase it like that, that means you might be willing to wait for it to happen.
Okay.
Buddy, that's like saying to an alcoholic or a heroin addict, just wait for your addiction to leave on its own.
I guess the way I'm imagining or perceiving the process is that as I do the lessons and the studying mm-hmm.
mm-hmm.
and work the course in my life,
mm-hmm.
it makes room for the change to start occurring.
That's certainly true. But I got to tell you, it will not happen of itself. If it did, then you would be a victim of your healing. In other words, you would not be in control of it. In other words, you would not be an extension of God.
Oh.
You would be some other smaller character waiting for things to happen.
Okay.
Even the good things. That's the good news and the bad news, Don. It will not happen to you. It will not. I mean, aren't you willing enough already yesterday? Wasn't yesterday hard enough? And wasn't sometime throughout the last couple of days you were earnest enough in your desire to be happy and peaceful and free and loving? But you didn't try hard enough? No, plenty. Right? Your willingness is there. You'd say, oh, please, come get me and I'll go. Land the ship, open the door, I'll get in. Come on, Jesus, come save me. Nope. Nope. There's a section in the book we might go to. And it talks about, you know, the fact of what you are makes it so you can't be saved. I said the fact of what you are makes it so you can't be saved. And then as you start to understand what you are, you're like, of course. No, thank goodness that there's no power that could come and manipulate your life. There is no power that would manipulate your life.
I thought in the course it says something about the last step God reaches out to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's.
Yeah. Not reaches out. He takes it. Takes the last step, even stronger still. Yes. That is in the course, you bet. That, even that, is not that God is waiting to grab your hand and pull you out at the last minute. That's not the last step. Of course, also, I'll give you a clue what the last step is. The course says that you're on a journey, right? He's bending to your sensibilities. He says you're on a journey without distance. So exactly how long can the last step be if it's a journey without distance? How much work is God going to do to take the last step for you when there's no steps? It is a koan. It is a metaphysical truth that is bound by the limits of words. But it's true. Simple truth. A journey without distance with a goal that never changed. Wow. That's what the last step looks like, is you realize, real, R-E-A-L, make real, realize, make true, understand that. Okay, that's good news. That means that you're really close. If it's a journey without distance, you're really close as distance go. You really couldn't be any closer. How close are you? How close? How close are you to your freedom, to your complete awareness and enlightenment, to your complete ability to manifest love and light? How close are you? Let me phrase it this way. How far away are you from God? Same question. The text says, lesson 284, the text says, workbook says, there's no place where God ends and you begin as something separate from himself. What do you got, Tim?
The thought occurred to me from a physics point of view. You're saying there is no distance, no space between. And when you eliminate the space between, you've also eliminated time. You must be in the present moment.
Nice.
It takes time for light to travel from another place to where you are. So no matter how close it is, you're looking back just a little bit in time, or maybe billions of years back in time. But if you're without distance, then you're in the present moment. There's no other choice.
And now you can understand that time and space are really the same discussion.
There, yeah.
As it says in chapter 2, and then drops it like a hot rock, or chapter
without
1.
Form.
Yeah. Says Yuki. Says good. Thank you, Tim. That's right.
Isn't
it's
it?
Such a. That's one of the beautiful things about physics and mathematics in our logical mind is that the closer we look, the more we see truths like what Tim just said. Tim's like, you know what? This is absolute. He gets it. And a little freedom is in his voice. You hear that? This little celebration of obviousness in his voice. That's the beauty of the truth. It is true all the time, everywhere. Sundari.
Well, this is a really interesting thing. I mean, this is physics-y as well. For me, the universe is like fractal and holographic, these repeating patterns of everything containing the whole. And I think of our dreams, not dream per se, but the sleep state, you know, the Borgs going into their containers. I mean, that we also do as just not being able to maintain separation it's like, oh, heck, too much energy to maintain the separation thing. But I've had an experience at an event of being out of phase with what was happening. And what I experienced was oscillating at an extraordinary frequency, like 10 to the 16th cycles per second,
yeah,
in and out of separation. And I have this theory in my book that being fractal and holographic, the same process like sleep is occurring moment by moment by moment by moment by moment in us. We're like oscillating in and out of unity constantly. And all our focus has been on the non-unity side of it. And, you know, once looking at the dark pixelated matrix inside me of light, dark, and little pixelated things, I focused on the light rather than the darkness. And it is like the same thing. Do we want to focus on the matter or the space between? Do we want to, you know, but I have this feeling that literally we're going in and out of unity all the time, as much as we are in and out of separation all the time.
Well, that must be true, since unity is true and separation is false, or a dream, or held with a fantasy use of mind. The truth remains true. If unity remains true, you can't actually be separate. You can think you are. So there's your oscillation. You bet. Yeah. I like to say, with A Course in Miracles, we go from a imperceptible, you know, high frequency oscillation, you know, or really the other way. We start with a very slow frequency, sloppy vacillation, flop. I'm an ego, flop. I'm a son of God, spiritual, flop. No, I'm really an ego and I hate the world, flop. No, there's love everywhere and you're love too, flop, you know. Two, doing your lesson, doing your work, doing your spiritual path, and then you start to oscillate faster and faster. And then now it's obvious that it's the same energy, same source. Sundari, show us the cover of your book and then type in an Amazon link or whatever you want into the chat room so people can buy it. Sundari wrote a book.
Wow, what a sweet thing. The Choice of Happiness, Glimpses from an Extraordinary, Ordinary, Scientific, Mystical Life. I said, very Gumby. I'll stick it in the chat.
Great. Thank you.
Recommended by, this would not have been published if it weren't for Gary Renard. He asked me to see the manuscript, And then he told me, you have to get it out there. And I never thought of it as a Course in Miracles book until he gave me his approval. And then I thought, it must be, because Gary only gives approval to Course in Miracles books.
Thanks. So, Luann.
The way I figure it is, when I realize completely and always and ever that I am an extension of God, then I'm enlightened and I am what I am and I know it.
Yes.
So for me, that's the last step. Is for you know, me to say, and the last step could be right now if I would just believe completely.
Yep. The last step would have to be right now. Whenever you're willing to see right now as eternity, then that's the last step. You're closer. Of course, also, and the Bible says it too, that it's closer to you than your own breath or your own heart. It's close.
Andrew, I want to say something. Yeah. I'm watching my what's going on in me. And I noticed real sadness coming up in relationship to the idea of what I was talking about. And you say, you do it. It's not about it comes to you. And what I realize is there is some attachment. There's some grief going on that, like, there's the defeat of hope, so to speak, and that there's grief in there and an attachment to it, and a bit of anger that you're saying there's no hope, and I'm just watching that.
No hope that Dawn will get enlightened.
Yes, I got that.
You got that one right.
Yeah, I got it. I appreciate Ross last week saying something about this character. Ross will never be enlightened. That was very helpful. So I get that, and I guess it's that that's reacting to it's the whole cause, whatever that's made up of.
You got it. Keep your eye on the ball. Keep your eye on the ball.
The nice thing is Ross doesn't exist.
Thank God.
I don't have to worry about him. He's just this character prancing along. He's an actor. You know, all the world's a stage and we are merely players. So
Ross exists. Ross exists on the stage. Ross exists in the play. The stage was, you know, it's an artificial universal place, mind. And the play... Ross, you know, in California, he's playing his script. That also is not true. It's made up. But don't fool yourself that it's not real, that Ross doesn't exist. And I know what you mean. In ultimate sense, he can't exist. You know, I know what you mean. But, you know, don't get yourself too strange. You know, don't, you know, for everybody, just going a little further than what Ross was doing. It's too weird to say there is no time, for example, unless you're in this meeting and you really mean it and you want to back it up. But yeah. However, you know what's really useful is to be able to say you're not Ross.
Yes.
That is useful. Why? Because when I say Ross, you turn your head. Busted! You think you're Ross. You think you're Dawn. You say Andrew, I'll say yeah. So it's very helpful to become aware of, in a world of duality, don't make a mistake. You are in a world of duality. You're learning. You are not of a world of duality. It's too weird to say that all is one when what you really believe and you're responding to is a world of duality. So we must somehow transcend We must somehow transcend with our consciousness the duality. And you transcend consciousness. Now that would take a miracle, but that's why we're here. That's exactly what we do. We look at the ego and we bust the ego for its unreality. And like what we're studying tonight, it's impossibility. It's not even very hard when you start to see how impossible the separate existence would be in truth. That's what makes it simple. That's our job.
See, that's our job. Andrew, you just said, I am in a world of duality, but I am learning that I
am not of. O-F. Of is a form of be or being, one of the most powerful words you can utter.
I'm not of that world.
I'm not of duality. It's impossible. You're of unity. Yep, you got it. That's what I want to talk about tonight, is what's the difference, you know, that switch. Change your mind. You change your mind from duality to unity, from the multiplicity to sameness, from differences to sameness. Can you somehow affect or allow that awareness to occur? And of course, the answer is yes. You've all done it for a glimpse here and a glimpse there. You've had your holy instances, and that's why you still hang on to this Course in Miracles book, because every once in a while, it just breaks through, and you have to admit, wow, this beep works. That's what happened to me. So many times I go, wow. I mean, my awareness just opens up. I'm doing the lesson or whatever. Some challenge is going on, and I just turn my thoughts over to my lesson of the day. And I go to peace and I go to awareness and my mind just goes, whew. I go, oh my God, I am never going to stop doing this. It's the kind of thing that I've been going through with the Course in Miracles. I don't know about you guys. I'm sure it's something similar. Somewhere it reached your heart and your mind at the same time. And you felt like the truth had come closer because of the guide that is in your Course in Miracles. Tonight, with these last couple paragraphs of this section we're going to go through, it kind of, you know, it's faith, belief, vision. What is faith, belief, and vision? You know, that's a path, isn't it? It's really, you know, belief, faith, and then vision. It's kind of the way it rolls out. It's a path you would walk. Step one, you know, belief. Step two, faith. That's the actual step. And then step three, vision, where you see through your problem. You see through the differences. And you become aware of the single simultaneous holograph of energy that is all pervasive. Because it's the same source. It's all the same power. If you look for differences, you will find differences. Only. If you use your Holy Spirit, using the same tools to look, you will see sameness. You will see shared identity. You will see, like Tim was describing, started to describe, the obviousness of unity. And Sundari is a doctor of chemistry, so she breaks it down and she knows the similarity. All things look different on the macro scale, but when you get down to the atomic scale, you know, things start to behave predictably in the same way, and it's pieces and parts that have been reassembled to make the bigger pieces you put names on. It is a story like that with your awakening as well. If you look and you give things names and differences, you'll have them, as many as you want. When you go the other way and you head to the periodic table, you can no longer call a piece of wood a tree. That's the wrong direction. You say, oh, let's see, carbon, nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, right? That's what wood really is, as you go that direction. And as you make your way to the truth and to the constituents of your thoughts themselves, you will see that these thoughts that you've been having, and thoughts hopefully you'll have tonight, can be turned toward the light and start to see the light everywhere, even where you thought there was darkness. That would be a spiritual awakening, huh? That'd be a miracle, huh? You must. It's not optional. You must. It takes a miracle. You need a guide. It's radical guide. And you have it. With this Course in Miracles, you have it. I don't know what level you are, but the book will somehow miraculously meet you. And then you come back the next year and you're ready to go a little higher and further and see deeper and have vision and open your spiritual. And then it takes you a step further. It's amazing that way. It's amazing that way. But look at page 552, or it's 562. I just love this sentence. I go there every time it flashes in my head. It's 562. I like to go there. It's near the end of the text. And, you know, Jesus is just waxing philosophical. He's high on 559 pages of this book. And out comes this beautiful, beautiful paragraph. Why don't we read 6, 7, and 8? They're just so beautiful. We should read them every once in a while. Jacqueline, I've got your mute. Would you read for us? Text page 562, 562. And we're at the top of the page. Jacqueline's going to read for us paragraph 6. And then, Luann, you'll be up next.
The holiest of all the spots on earth is where an ancient hatred has become a present love. And they come quickly to the living temple where a home for them has been set up. There is no place in heaven holier. And they have come to dwell within the temple offered them, to be their resting place as well as yours. What hatred has released to love becomes the brightest light in heaven's radiance.
Well, you got to read that sentence again. This is a metaphysical analysis of the awakening to Christ's vision. I mean, I could say another paragraph on that, but here it is in one sentence. Jacqueline, please. What hatred has released?
What hatred has released to love becomes the brightest light in heaven's radiance.
How many books do you own that have hatred and love in the same sentence? Mm-hmm. How many spiritual books have hatred and love in the same sentence, each supporting the other? This book has it in a few places. I'm like, wow, yes. Please continue.
And all the lights in heaven brighter grow in gratitude for what has been restored.
Absolutely. You know what heaven is in A Course in Miracles? Heaven's a code word. It's a code word for understanding. And it makes more sense as you understand. You say, yeah, of course. As the mind reconnects, as the mind understands, then that's the heaven state. That's why heaven is here and now, it says elsewhere. With your understanding, there's no place where, of course, the truth is not. But it's not helpful when you're first starting out with A Course in Miracles, which is why the beautiful word heaven is there. It's such a beautiful word. You have visions of angels and clouds and harps, and that's just fine. Ross.
And then the Course also says that you still believe your understanding is a big contributor to the truth. And of course, then it says, well, it's not. I'm paraphrasing. Yeah. It does say that's the meaning that I get from it.
Yeah, in that paragraph, it says it's hard for you to accept that your part is so little for a gain so large. Your ego just can't accept such a bargain. Okay, Luann, hit us with paragraph 7.
Around you, angels hover lovingly to keep away all darkened thoughts of sin. Then keep the light where it is entered in.
You know, angels is only used 12 times in this book, and this is one of them.
Your footprints bright lighten up the world, for where you walk, forgiveness gladly goes with you. No one on earth but offers thanks to one who has restored his home and sheltered him from bitter winter and the freezing cold. And shall the Lord of heaven and his Son give less in gratitude for such more, for so much more.
And then, Ross, I got your mute. Give us paragraph 8.
Now is the temple of the living God rebuilt as host again to him by whom it was created.
And what might that temple to the living God be other than your mind, your right mind, your aware mind? Please continue.
Where he dwells, his Son dwells with him, never separate. And they give thanks that they are welcome made at last. Where stood a cross, stands now the risen Christ, and ancient scars are healed within his sight. An ancient miracle has come to bless and to replace an ancient enmity that came to kill. In gentle gratitude do God the Father and the Son return to what is theirs and will forever be. Now is the Holy Spirit's purpose done, for they have come, for they have come at last. A lot of capitalizations in that.
What?
A lot of capitalizations in that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Helen, for working so clearly to be able to do that. I mean, that was her, that was all Helen. You know, she had to make those distinctions when she heard. She did not, you know, she said it wasn't quite like reading a chalkboard. Only occasionally would she see a word pop in her head when she was struggling. And Jesus would somehow pop a word in her head, like a chalkboard. She says, normally it was just this overwhelming sense of what to write. It was really amazing. Ross, read for us paragraph 6, sentence 1 again.
The holiest of all the spots on earth is where an ancient hatred has become a present love.
Wow, there's hate and love in the same sentence written in celebration of where you're going. Of course, you can't exclude anything, any thought. Nothing can be left behind without being reinterpreted to love. Well, everything has to be. That's why the Buddhists have the Bodhisattva vow. And it says that the Bodhisattva, as he reaches his own enlightenment, before he takes the last step, says, wait, I will awaken all my brothers, all minds who still suffer. And how many are there? Infinite. But I would not spare one. This is the awakened certainty. It's just a beautiful, it's in the course like 20 times. I could show you a bunch of them. Yes. It's just a loving concept. It's so loving to not leave anything behind out of a certainty that you carry enough light to shine away any dark. And it's a wonderful experience. How? Because the holiest of all spots on earth is where an ancient hatred or a super dark spot has become a present love or a super light spot. It's a beautiful contrast. It's love. It's love in action. Of course. So don't worry that you would ever leave anything of value behind or suffering. You will not. You will gladly shine your light. Good, good, good. Thank you. That was just a couple of beautiful paragraphs. Okay, please turn to page 453 in the text. And let's see if we can pick up these last two paragraphs of this section. 453. This is a chapter called Reason in Perception. reason, right mind, perception. That's like judgment. You are addicted to perception. This is the situation you find yourself. So what we'll do is we'll take your addiction, this perception, time, space, other. We'll take that and we'll apply some reason to it gently, 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 leading you out of your nightmare, the nightmare that has guilt in it, nightmare that has actually, this is how bad your nightmare is. You feel fear and you think there's some wisdom to the fear that will help you and guide you and keep you safe. Yeah, that's right. That's you. Jesus is like, wow, you really, you got away from this whole love concept quite a bit there, cowboy. We're going to bring you back with A Course in Miracles. That's what we're going to do. All right, these are two pretty powerful paragraphs. Let's get on them. Okay, Don, you ready to roll? Would you read us paragraph 11 on page 453 in the text?
I will.
Thank you.
Think you the Holy Spirit is concerned with this? He is not. He gives not what it is his purpose to lead you from.
And let me tell you, let me just remind you what this is. The this here is sacrifice. Quick definition of sacrifice. You give up something valuable in order to get something else. You give up something valuable. That's why it's a sacrifice. And you have to pay in order to get something of value. This is in infinite abundance of which you are. This is another separation term, sacrifice. It's impossible. You who have all the time. Please continue.
You think he will deprive you for your good, but good and deprivation are opposites and cannot meaningfully join in any way. It is like saying that the moon and sun are one because they come with night and day, and so they must be joined. Yet sight of one is but the sign the other has disappeared from sight. Nor is it possible that what gives light be one with what depends on darkness to be seen. Neither demands the sacrifice of the other, yet on the absence of the other does each depend.
Clever. He's just trying to have you witness the obviousness of the contrast of love or eternity or God and the idea that you have to give up something valuable that you really want, like your life or your kids or time or space or your body in particular, in order for you to be a return to true love. No. This is part of the really good news of your spiritual path. You leave nothing of value behind. What you do let go, you let go because of its valuelessness. Like 2 + 2 is 4.7. You don't have to remember that. I said it, and there it is. Some of you remember it's 4.7. It's completely valueless. In fact, it'll lead you astray if you use it, if you try to do math with that. So you just let it go. That's how easy that is. Emily. Okay, hold on. I got your mute. Go. There you are.
Also, can we let go of the perception or judgment because it's valueless, and that brings us closer to reality?
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's right. That's right. The judgments, what happens is that you let go of the hateful judgments, and you start to prefer letting the Holy Spirit do the judging for you. You still live in time and space, and you've got things to deal with, and so you find you have to make decisions. You turn them over to your Holy Spirit to show you what's really going on. That's how you start out. But then as you get there, you realize, oh my God, there are no judgments required at all. No, of course not. You don't need to judge a play. Watch it. Play it. No need to judge it. Good, good, Emily. Good, good. It's a wonderful path. Okay, Luann, what do you got? I got your mute. Oh, we both got your mute.
So getting back to what you said just before Emily was being reassured. So for instance, I have a daughter who I adore. Okay, that's just one little thing. Or it's a big thing for me. But when I die, my body dies. I shouldn't say I, but when I die, my body, I don't have to worry about dying because I will never lose her. Mm-hmm. The true me will never lose her because we're one, so therefore I'll always be with her. Is that true? So,
It's arguable that you won't be able to know your daughter fully until you die.
Oh, yeah, wow. I can see that. If I am as an extension of God, and she is also, not if, because I am an extension of God, and she is also, I won't know that until I come back to God.
If you so choose, that's right. You can know that now. Since you just spoke it, you're fully capable of knowing that. If you choose. And the sooner the better, I would say. Why wait?
You know, and my ego is fighting to say that's not true, Luann. You don't feel it all the time, so how can it be true?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there is absolutely a fear of God. There is a fear of God. If you're listening to the ego's words and the ego's logic, there's a fear of God. You want to see where the Course says it in a pretty pithy way?
I've read it many times.
And right? We just looked at it recently. Let's look at it again. It's on page 243, I think. If it isn't, well, it must be. It's a place where it's a couple of places where it says this. It's in the workbook as well. But, you know, I think this is probably the most pithy place where it lays it out for you. Let's read a couple of these paragraphs, just three paragraphs. Let's read 2, 3, and 4. And whoever reads 4, reach for the Kleenex box because it's so beautiful. When you get this, I had a wonderful awakening with this one. It's just my heart opened, and I was just a tears poured, and I thought, wow, the truth is spoken. Wait. So let's see, where are we? Deborah, have you read yet?
Not yet.
Wait, great. Would you read for us paragraph 2 on page 242?
Under the ego.
You're up next.
Oh. Under the ego's dark foundation is the memory of God, and it is of this that you are really afraid. For this memory would instantly restore you to your proper place, and it is this place that you have sought to leave.
Pause. Let's just pause. Take a breath. There it is in black and white. Your chosen teacher knows the path that you've been on. Please continue.
Your fear of attack is nothing compared to your fear of love. You would be willing to look even upon your savage wish to kill God's son if you did not believe that it saves you from love.
This is starting setting you up. We're setting you up for a punchline here with all these powerful words. So many times have you said you want love. So many times have you asked, where's the love? So many times have you seen tragedies in this world and you've challenged, there is no God. The ego has a deep sense of satisfaction knowing that its job is well done when that happens. These three paragraphs are setting you up for a punchline. Please continue.
For this wish caused the separation, and you have protected it because you do not want the separation healed.
You're like a kid who has run out the back door right before dinner time. You just want to play. You just want to play. It's innocent, very innocent. Please continue.
You realize that by removing the dark cloud that obscures it, your love for your father would impel you to answer his call and leap into heaven.
Leap into heaven.
You believe that attack is salvation because it would prevent you from this. For still deeper than the ego's foundation and much stronger than it will ever be, is your intense and burning love of God and his for you. This is what you really want to hide.
In a childish way, you have been caught up in your little game in the backyard. And you think that if you busy yourself enough, mom will look out the back and say, well, all right, finish your little game and then come in. You're like, yes! But you know what's inside? Food. Rest, a warm shower, hugs and love, and everything that you really want. This is a short, very, very short fascination you have with time and space and separation. Indeed. Tim, would you give us paragraph 3? I got your mute. Go for it.
In honesty, is it not harder for you to say, I love than I hate? You associate love with weakness and hatred with strength, and your own real power seems to you as your real weakness.
Okay, so your real power is love?
Seems to you as your real weakness. Mm-hmm. For you could not control your joyous response to the call of love if you heard it, and the whole world you thought you made would vanish. The Holy Spirit, then, seems to be attacking your fortress, for you would shut out God, and he does not will to be excluded.
So it said it twice so far. Said it twice so far. It says, if you did turn back toward love, if you smelled dinner, you would just drop your toys and say, spaghetti, yes! Like a little kid, and you just run straight in. You would just run straight in. It's everything you really want. More interesting than playing is the love of God.
It says leap.
Leap. You would leap. He said it twice so far. That is correct. That is correct. Okay. Emily, I got your mute. Would you read for us beautiful paragraph 4?
You have built your whole insane belief system because you think you would be helpless in God's presence and you would save yourself his love because you think it would crush you into nothingness.
You know, there have been plenty of times, usually when it's a small group, but you know, we're in person. And I've got the question where people say, kind of afraid of being really peaceful because it'd be boring. Why would I want to have no troubles at all. Because then I would be bored and it'd be like death. And I got to have some stimulation to keep it interesting and stay alive. This is the drunkenness under which you live. A comment, Tim?
It's a misunderstanding to think that peace is a state of stasis, of non-motion or immobility. Peace is living spirit. It's flowing water. It's motion, but it's motion with the intent of heaven behind it.
Oh, I love the way you said that. I wish you would write a poem for us with what's in your heart right now. I just think that's so beautiful. Tim, I wish you would write us a poem. That is great.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. The words don't do justice what he is feeling. The words don't do justice. Thank you. That's true. Let's continue.
You are afraid it would sweep you away from yourself and make you little, because you believe that magnitude lies in defiance and that attack is grandeur. You think you have made a world God would destroy, and by loving him, which you do, you would throw this world away, which you would.
This book knows me better than I know me. And I know it because I can barely hold back the tears when I see that sentence. It's like, oh, I'm so busted. I've only sought this in my heart of hearts. That's all I really care about, the truth. You bet. Mm-hmm. Please continue.
Therefore, you have used the world to cover your love. And the deeper you go into the blackness of the ego's foundation, the closer you come to the love that is hidden there.
What? Did she read that right? Are you sure, Emily? Are you sure that's what it says? Read that again. What? The blackness. What? Go into the blackness to find the love? What? No, try that again.
Therefore, you have used the world to cover your love. And the deeper you go into the blackness of the ego's foundation, the closer you come to the love that is hidden there.
Fact. Simple, glorious truth. That were you to actually look at the foundation of the ego, you would stumble on the one power. Now, I think that's good news. That is truly good news. Okay, go ahead and finish that off.
And it is this that frightens you.
And that is a bunch of italics. That entire sentence is italicized. He's making a point. Saying it again and again. Sundari.
Well, this is kind of an interesting thing, this last few sentences. I feel I've sort of been living it the last few days as I dove so beautifully into temptation, swimming around and, you know, off little explosive things in my life. And it's really interesting. I kind of, again, think of the vibration that we are rather than the physicality. And it feels to me like the more work you do, there really is a peace and a, you know, like a stiller front of your energy. So bigger waves can come in and crash. And that somehow it feels to me that the challenges increase in magnitude in a way the stiller you become as you go deeper into that place.
As much as is useful. It's good news and bad news. It's as much as is useful. As much as is useful will come. You need a big wave? Little one wasn't enough? You're so loved. You're so loved that a big, big, big wave will wash you clean off your ego foundation. Yeah, you bet. You know, it's a hard truth, but it's everywhere. That, you know, you're not given what more than you can handle. In fact, you're not given less either. You know, Don has talked to us so many times about the dark moods that he goes through. Well, those dark moods are also the door through which he shall walk. The closer he's looked into the darkness of that foundation, the closer he gets to the love of God. We just read that. Those waves come, Sundari. Those waves are there. They are there to hurt you according to the ego, to help you according to the spirit. The spirit of truth is everywhere. Deeper you go, the closer you get to love. We just read that. What does it take to make you go deep? What does it take to make you go deep? What does it take to make one like you go deep? It takes what's coming because you're so loved. You will not be left comfortless, and you will be pulled as necessary back to heaven. These are doors. You have to walk through them. Nobody's going to push you through a door. What do you got, Sundari?
Well, just the implications of that are that there's nothing ever wrong.
Yeah, you got it.
Or me.
There's nothing ever wrong.
To temptation or, you know, and that's a tricky thing to remember. And it's, I was in a meeting tonight right before this one on patience. I mean, it was just that topic. And kind of realized looking that all impatience is thinking something's wrong or someone's wrong. And, you know, it's sort of interesting how, I guess, separation comes down to that at a very core thing for me.
Yep, you better believe it. You better believe it. Turn to page 88 real quick. And we'll go to Jason after this. Jason, keep your thought. Go to page 88 real quick. Jason, make a note. And Sundari, read for us paragraph 12.
Well, now you must learn that only infinite patience produces immediate effects. This is the way in which time is exchanged for eternity. Infinite patience calls upon infinite love. And by producing results now, it renders time unnecessary. We have repeatedly said that time is a learning device to be abolished when it is no longer useful. The Holy Spirit, who speaks for God in time, also knows that time is meaningless. He reminds you of this in every passing moment of time, because it is his special function to return you to eternity and to remain to bless your creations there. He is the only blessing you can truly give, because he is truly blessed, because he has been given you freely by God. You must give him as you received him.
And read that first sentence again for us.
The first sentence.
And I love the way you punch the word now right from the gate, because that's how it's written. Beautiful.
Now you must learn that only infinite patience produces immediate effects. Without knowing it, I was thinking of this paragraph the whole meeting.
I'll bet you were. Yeah, I know you've seen this before. Immediate. Who doesn't want immediate effects?
And can I say one more thing? It's, for me, time is judgment. Since I watched the movie Mr. Nobody with David Hoffmeister, it just became identical to three lines. Time and judgment are the same. And 2 days ago, it was Rosh Hashanah, and when I first found out with David Hoffmeister that time is judgment, it was really close to Rosh Hashanah. And right now, 2 days ago, it became the year 5,782. And so I thought, I've known this stuff all my life, but I had no idea what the zero was. So I Googled, what are we numbering from here? I've been in this religion a long time. What's the number? And it turned out to be the most amazing thing, the moment that Adam and Eve were expelled from paradise. And I thought, wow, that's the moment of eating of the tree of good and evil. It's the moment of this is better than this. It's the moment of this is wrong and this is not quite as wrong. And this is even less wrong than that. And this is better. And
Judgment.
And so, but that oscillation I was talking about, mm-hmm. in and out of creation, mm-hmm. In and out of unity.
Yeah.
Of oneness is happening. It's like you're expelled from paradise and then you step out of time, out of judgment, and ooh, you're in paradise again. And ooh, there you are, out of paradise, you judge. Mm-hmm. But that's the oscillation. That's the oscillation I was talking
about. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Thank you, Sundari. Okay, Jason, what do you got?
Can you hear me?
Yep. Sounds good.
Oh, what I was thinking about. You don't get what you can't take, or you can't handle waves. You know, I was thinking of Ram Dass and his stroke, and I thought, wow, how could this happen to such a spiritual guy, you know? And then I saw a video of him, you know, within a month of his passing, and he was like in such gaga spiritual awareness, happiness. I went, yeah, good for you, man. It was like, yes, that's where we're trying to get to, is just let it all be and be loving with it. It was just such a beautiful thing to
witness. It's obviously true.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the body's going through. I told you I met this Course in Miracles woman long ago when I was first starting out, and she was the one who brought the cupcakes and coffee, and she brought nice things to the meeting, and she would get permission for, you know, work the money with the church, and, you know, she would just helpful, you know, just so helpful to everybody. And she got cancer. And somebody said, you're obviously deeply into A Course in Miracles. You obviously love this material and you love all of us. Why did you get cancer? She didn't miss a beat. She says, why not me? I have a body. She was just unfazed. The cancer didn't mean anything. Nothing I see means anything. I thought, oh yeah, all good. All good. Okay, let's go back to... Page 454.
Can I ask just a brief question?
Yeah.
The black's to black. Is that something that we can handle, or is that something that's going to destroy us?
What did you say?
The blackest darkness is what.
Yeah, the darkest darkness. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, the darkest darkness. Is it going to be a darkness so dark that you fall apart?
No, it's the other way. It's a darkness that when you finally resign to perfect darkness, this is when your heart breaks open. You see, partial darkness leaves hope you can stay in the darkness and make a living there. In the absolute, utter surrender to the darkness, you get into the present moment. You get into no need to perceive. In partial darkness, you're very busy perceiving and judging and dreaming. It works with utter light as well. You don't have to go to the darkness. When you surrender to perfect light, complete light, you know what I mean? The one power. The absolute nature of it makes it so that you're completely present and there's no need to perceive. You would not need to look at differences in either dark or light. This is why the word absolute is a spiritual word that launches usually entire books. No, it doesn't kill you, Loanne. Nothing can kill you. Nothing can actually extinguish you either. Do we have enough time? We do. Cool. Let's go to page 191 real quick. Just we're going to look at one sentence there that I like to. Just, of course, is reminding you of what's going on with this whole being crushed out of life. Turn to page 191 really quick. And look on the right-hand side, you know, top page, paragraph 8. And just because we're in a hurry, look in the middle of the paragraph, sentence 3. Jesus is calling it out. He's saying, look, here's what's really going on. He's saying, you are not sick, and you cannot die, period. He's just saying, look, I can see from where I'm standing, you're not actually sick and you can't actually die. And then he says, well, but you can confuse yourself with things that do. And that's why I say you don't have to go that, you know, Ross is not real. Ross is hungry. Sometimes he's happy. Sometimes he's sad. Sometimes he's playing the hard, tough love parent role with his misfit kid. And other times he's in the supporting, loving parent role as his kid succeeds. Wow. This is the Ross character. Confuse yourself with things that live and die and love with a small L-O-V-E here. You can confuse yourself with things that get sick, things that get depressed, things that get angry, things that get old, things that get hungry. And you will until you don't. It's not true that that's what you are. It's the only place you will find the holy instant and the freedom you seek is that you will allow yourself, you will allow your mind to touch the absolute, if even for only a moment. Black or white, doesn't matter. But it won't be gray. There's no absolute gray. There's no neutral. You must choose. Yeah. Okay, please turn back to page 450. Does that answer your question, Leanne?
You answered my question. It doesn't release all my fears.
Try chocolate.
I have chocolate. It didn't help.
All right, we'll work on that.
453?
454, paragraph 12.
Okay.
And I think we've come around to Ross. Ross, would you read for us paragraph 12 on 454?
The body was made to be a sacrifice to sin, and in the darkness so it still is seen. Yet in the light of vision, it is looked upon quite differently. you can have faith in it to serve the Holy Spirit's goal and give it power to soon to serve as means to help the blind to see. But in their seeing, they look past it, as do you. The faith and the belief you gave it belongs beyond. You gave perception and belief in faith from mind to body. Let them now be given back to what produced them and can use them still to save itself from what it knows.
Yeah, the reverse miracle and then reverse that back to the miracle. You had an adventure into the darkness. Now let's go back to the light. You're called. You are called to come home. You're absolutely called to come home. Yeah. Hmm. So the body was made to be a sacrifice to sin because it's expendable. Oh, Sundari?
Well, you know, it's so interesting how we've given it all to the body, and then the trick is to make the journey of taking it back from us being the body. And that process I did, again, from interacting with David Hoffmeister, of him saying, I said, my daughter. And he called me on it in a way that I could hear it. And just to, and now when I talk to myself, I talk about this as the vehicle. This vehicle, you know, or the body, but I'll talk about it as the vehicle more and more and more. And that's like really useful to me as a mind training. And the house and the car and the glass rather than, I mean, doing away with the word my feels to me like a huge practice that has been like incredibly useful in making that journey away from the body is me.
You know, Eckhart Tolle had a great sentence in his second book. I loved it. My favorite sentence. He says, I is at once the very smallest increment of thought or the very largest concept you can have.
Say it again.
I is at once either the very smallest thought you can have, little ego I, or the largest concept you could possibly imagine. Same word, I. Yeah. What do you got, Don?
So, in the, just looking at the last two sentences, 6 and 7, the you is the Son of God? You is
Son Son of God, yes. Sleeping Son of God.
Sleeping Son of God.
The dreaming Son of God, you.
Oh, you froze. I'm on my screen. You're muted.
In the body. Invest identity in body.
We didn't hear you for a while, Andrew.
Yeah, you've broken up.
In your I'm back.
The whole answer was broken up.
Must have been good. The ego has a way of glitching stuff when it gets really good. The you here is indeed the sleeping Son of God. The wrong mind, the small mind, the body mind, has given over the power of mind to the body. invested it in this little separate piece so that it could be separate from oneness and away from love. Remember we read earlier, you're really afraid of God because you love him so much. You think you would just disappear, and you would, because you do. Wait, who would run from love? Who would run from the perfect dinner? And the perfect hug? Nobody.
Nobody.
Unless you're busy with some little fantasy, which just won't last. And that's why, that's God's perspective. You're fantasizing being separate from love. All you want is love. Like the prodigal son who left home. And God says, sure, you want money and everything? Go have some fun in the town. Go for it. Be well. The guy spends all of his money. And he's like, man, I really wish I was home in comfort. If I could just be among my father's pigs, I'd be happier than struggling in this cold city. And the father says, welcome home. I'm so glad you're back. You are my love and you're my joy. Welcome back. Yeah. So you, yes, that's what the you is. The you is your little separate juvenile creator. Mute your dog. Okay, how do we find
ourselves? Not my dog. I like the word juvenile because a lot of times I feel like I am a juvenile. I'm doing things I have no idea why I'm doing them.
Well, yeah. Especially with separation and living as a separate being, you're really juvenile. You're just making it up as you go along.
And we're doing it all on our own.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, in a way, you're not really on your own. You're trying to make the alone experience happen. You want to see where the Course says that? Let's see if I can remember this page. How about 222? I think there's a better reference than this, but this will get us started. Look at 222, paragraph 9. Long time since we've been here. What are you doing? What is this world? What the heck? Jacqueline, would you read that for us? I got your mute. What are we doing here? What is this?
Paragraph 9 on 222.
Bingo.
The world you perceive is a world of separation. Perhaps you are willing to accept even death to deny your father. Yet he would not have it so, and so it is not so. You still cannot will against him, and that is why you have no control over the world you made. It is not a world of will because it is governed by the desire to be unlike God, and this desire is not will. The world you made is therefore totally chaotic, governed by arbitrary and senseless laws, and without meaning of any kind, for it is made out of what you do not want. And that's where the ego. Ego can only knows what it does not want, right?
That a girl, you got it.
For it is made out of what you do not want, projected from your mind because you are afraid of it. Yet this world is only in the mind of its maker, along with his real salvation. Do not believe it is outside of yourself, for only by recognizing where it is will you gain control over it. For you do have control over your mind, since the mind is the mechanism of decision.
Yes. The good news and the bad news. It's in your mind. Your problems are in your mind. The solution is in your mind. Your choice to stay and develop, and it's in your mind. Absolutely.
I love that paragraph. Thank you. That's exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank you. You're so welcome.
So you could almost infer that this is where Ken Wapnick got one of his ideas about the decision maker.
Yeah.
Because it says mechanism of your mind is the mechanism of decision.
I think you're right, Ross.
And nowhere in the Course is there a reference to the decision maker, but this is pretty close.
That's pretty close. It's one of the places pretty close too, and that's about it. Yeah, and then Ken just had a huge awakening. He thought, this is how I can, and he just
teach it, yeah.
Launched from there. That's what he taught.
The blue dot on his diagram and all
that. Yeah, how else could he reconcile in his own mind what's going on? Yeah, yeah. For me, I don't like the decision maker too much. It goes only so far for me because it kind of creates another character that you have to deal with. You know, wrong mind, right mind, and welcome number three, the decision maker. The neutral, yeah. I don't, anyway.
Well, I like to think of it as Jesus is in my mind. He wrote the course. Therefore, I wrote the course in order for me to awaken.
Bingo.
So there's your circle.
There's the circle. There's your own hand reaching back. You got it. Beautiful, Ross. Beautiful. Hey, turn real quick. Do we have time? Yeah, we have just enough time to read another beautiful paragraph on this topic. Look at page 653, 653. Tim, I got your mute. When you get there, read for us this amazing paragraph two.
I'm sorry, I don't have any words right now, so I'll ask for a pass.
Okay, you got it.
Thank
you. Deborah, are you there? Could you read for us or sing for us if you prefer? Paragraph two.
A page what?
653 in the text.
Real choice is no illusion, but the world has none to offer. All its roads but lead to disappointment, nothingness, and death. There is no choice in its alternatives. Seek not escape from problems here. The world was made that problems could not be escaped.
Whoa!
Be not deceived by all the different names its roads are given. They have but one end. And each is but the means to gain that end. For it is here that all its roads will lead, however differently they seem to start, however differently they seem to go. Their end is certain, for there is no choice among them. All of them will lead to death. On some you travel gaily for a while before the bleakness enters, and on some the thorns are felt at once. The choice is not what will the ending be, but when it comes.
You know, it's kind of a dark paragraph, isn't it?
But yep. How do you find joy in a joyless place?
Yeah, how do you? Yes! Woo! That's another stark. Where is that? That on page?
Well, the quote is, how do you find joyless... joy in a joyless place by realizing that you are not there.
Yes, I think that's page 97. That's just right. Turn to page 97, paragraph 6. That's right on target. Ross, would you read that paragraph for us? I got your mute. Go for it. Page 97, everybody.
How else can you find joy in a joyless place except by realizing that you are not there?
Wow! What kind of book are you reading?
You cannot be anywhere God did not put you, and God created you as part of Him.
Now, there's a complete teaching in obviousness. If there is God and you're of God, and God is all the power there is, you can't be anyplace else. You can't suddenly be different or more than God if God is all there is. Please continue.
That is both where you are and what you are.
There's a complete teaching. Where you are and what you are. Bingo. End of teaching. Please continue.
And when you are.
Yeah.
It is completely unalterable. It is total inclusion. You cannot change it now or ever. It is forever true. It is not a belief, but a fact. Anything that God created is as true as He is. Its truth lies only in its perfect inclusion in Him who alone is perfect. To deny this is to deny yourself and Him, since it is impossible to accept one without the other.
Sometimes I read a paragraph like that, and I picture Jesus with a hammer knocking a nail in. Bang, 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 bang. He says the same thing six times in a row, driving that nail flat. He says, look, you can't be anywhere God didn't put you. And God created you as part of him, and that's both where you are and what you are. Look, it's completely unalterable. It's a total inclusion. You can't change it now or ever. And he hits the nail again. This is forever true. And then he says, hits the nail again. And it's not a belief. It's a fact with a capital F. And he continues. I love it. He does that several times. Jacqueline, what do you got?
Well, this paragraph's great. You know, I've been wishing I had, you know, felt more a kind of happiness about the, you know, what we're learning. And the joy is starting to come up. I noticed that I've been having this come bubbling up of joy. Mm. And when I, you know, think, well, this isn't, you know, really knowing that, yeah, I'm not a body. I know all of that. It's all the things that we're learning, but I can feel the joy starting to come up.
Yay, bravo.
Yeah.
The light has come, Jacqueline.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. The light has come. That's what it feels like. That's why I like the word enlightenment, because it's the lightness of being. And it goes everywhere your mind is, everywhere you are. So everything becomes just lighter. Everything becomes lighter. All right. Well, we've come to the end of our deal here. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me.
Mm. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good night. Thank you for bringing all your honest questions and your comments and your learning and your teaching. Appreciate mm-hmm. everything you guys bring up.
Thank you.
Let's Andy. Do it again next week.
Everybody,
do it. Bye. Bye, everybody. Good night.
Good night, everybody.